Monday, October 6, 2008. Upon further review, episode number 63. Well, the economy may be collapsing and the stock market may be tanking, but there's one thing we can be sure of in the future. We're bullish on the opinion market. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And I want to welcome everybody to episode number 63. We know it's been a little while. Clea actually said I should put a picture of our baby to sort of explain everything. Just every couple of weeks when people are going, where's the show? We just, you know, put a picture up of our baby. And then you're distracted by our beautiful child. And then, you know, before you know it, our next show is up. But we want to thank everybody for helping us troubleshoot the last episode. I guess a couple of people had trouble downloading it. It had something to do with WordPress not playing nice with PodPress. But that has now been fixed. And so we
are... You think, are they from the same company?
No. PodPress is a third-party thing. Done by somebody totally different. And
oh, okay.
There is a kind of, you know, there's a people yelling at each other about who did what and why. And but anyway, you may, by the way, hear during our show today some babbling from our aforementioned daughter, who is beautiful and wonderful, but it's during the day and we needed to get a show out. So we decided to do it when she's awake. So you may hear her babbling. And if so, you'll know why. She's just contributing. She's adding her, ideas to what we have to say. Three things on the docket as per usual today. We're going to start out by reviewing the stock market. That seems to be on everyone's mind right now, and so we figured that it would make sense to talk a little bit about it. Then we're going to move on to talk about Spore. This is a new game. It's sort of the amazing game on the block that everyone wants. I got this for my birthday, and I've now had a chance to play through it, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the basics of this game, and does it really live up to the hype? It was hyped as a universe in a box. So, you know, is it really a universe in a box?
That's
we'll
how
find
they
out.
Sold it?
That's how they sold it, yeah. It's from the guy who did The Sims, so there's, you know, a lot of stuff going on behind that. So we'll talk about Spore. And then we're going to conclude with a review of a podcast called Seen Unseen. This is a suggestion from our friend Chris, who actually sent us this a few months ago, actually. And I should say, we had another podcast on the docket, but
right.
When we went to go review it, the show has since stopped. They've closed down.
So and I said we should review it anyway. But.
Yeah, I was like, no. Well, we're not going to review shows that don't even exist anymore. So this is going to be a review of a show called Seen Unseen. We want to thank Chris for that suggestion. And that's what we're going to do today. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right, so let's move on to the first item on the docket, and that is the stock market. And I don't have a specific website for this, although you could go to the www.nyse.com, which is the New York Stock Exchange. We are recording this on Monday, October 6th, when the market is down another 500 points. And as you probably know, there was a big bailout in the United States that was passed last week. There was a lot of controversy about whether they should pass it or not. It's something on the order of $700 billion. Plus another $150 billion of pork and all these other things.
Why is it that they report it that way? They're like, $700 million, oh, and another $150.
Yeah. Well, because that's the part they don't want anybody to know. Unless they're Lou Dobbs, who is an incredible blowhard, who, you know, goes, this is a terrible thing for the taxpayer. Essentially, what happened, as people probably know, is that the credit markets froze up due to many factors, but the major factor had to do with a lot of these terrible home mortgages and a lot of bad debt that had built up in the system. A lot of the companies relied on that happening. They bought up a lot of bad debt, and this is sort of a lot of that coming home to roost. A bunch of banks have started to fail. Lehman Brothers has shut down. Another bank, I think Washington Mutual, was bought out by another bank. Now there's word that Wachovia is going to get bought out by somebody
else. All this was a long time coming. I mean, these banks have been in trouble for over a year at
right.
least.
But now it's all starting to hit at once, and that's obviously impacted the presidential campaign as well. It's impacted the way that people look at the economy across the world, the Asian markets collapsed, and so on. So I guess one of the things I wanted to mention, now Clea does have some stocks that her father had gotten her years ago. I think she has some in Starbucks.
Yeah, I have my retirement as it is right now in Starbucks.
Right, so you better hope that all of you should go out and buy chai lattes. So we have that. And then my stocks, I have extremely limited stocks. All that I have are basically in my retirement portfolio, which is through my university. So I have been fortunately and blissfully uninterested in a lot of this for many years. And every time I see one of these collapses with, you know, these pictures of traders on the floor of the stock exchange with their heads in their hands, I feel more and more pleased that I have ignored this for so many years. Because I guess what I wanted to comment about and sort of, you know, bring up for the discussion is I understand that the stock exchange has this kind of appeal. You can make a lot of money. There's this sort of
gambler's
mentality.
Yeah, we have a friend who made money even during this time, Greg.
Who?
Jeff, you just told us how he made like all this money during this time.
Yeah, but now he's afraid he's going to be out of a job because his company is losing all of this money overall in the stock
market.
That's
the breaks, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the problem, though. I mean, it's basically, to my mind, a socially acceptable form of blackjack.
Of gambling.
Like, of gambling.
But that's my issue, is that I don't have a problem with this if this was some small part of the segment of our society. But the fact that our whole economy supposedly is based on this, that's
right.
What scares me, is
right.
Our economy is based on risk.
That's right. And, you know, the Great Depression was preceded immediately before that by the stock market crash of the 1920s. The recession of the late 1980s up until the early 1990s was preceded by the deregulation stuff of the 1980s. So the economy is very much tied into what the stock market does, which has had a lot of negative effects, I think, in terms of how we sort of zoom upwards and downwards. There's been less volatility because of the Federal Reserve and because of other things, other measures that were put into place after the Great Depression. But still, you know, there's a lot of sort of up and down and people sort of tracking numbers back and forth. And I guess part of the thing that annoys me about the way the stock market operates, and again, I will fully admit, I'm not an economist. I do not claim to have extensive knowledge of this area. But the one thing I have a little knowledge about, I think, is psychology. And what annoys me about this is that this whole business is founded fundamentally on psychology, right? Like, the reason that the markets are falling today is because investors are worried. So because investors are worried, the stock market, they sell off and the stock market drops. And all you hear from these analysts...
That's one part of it, though. I think the psychology of the, will something go up or will something go down based on what people's fear, is only one part of it. It's also based on people, whether or not things will become more worth more in the future, or going for commodities, seeing the worth of something, like seeing, I think someday there are going to be satellite phones that everyone, and we're going to call them cell phones, and therefore I'm going to put my money in antennas that, you know, will be used by these cell phones. I mean, I think
now,
it's not just based on the psychology.
With respect, I think what you've said is very rational and logical. The headline, and I quote, "Panicked global markets reel, shaken by massive sell-offs by panic investors who fear a much-vaunted U.S. finance sector bailout will fail to end a crippling credit crisis. There is all-out panic," said ING senior strategist, blah, blah, blah. Everyone hoped that things would calm down, but in effect there are still strong fears
of
the domino effect.
I said it was one part of it.
Panic, fear, worry, shaken. I mean, it's like you're dealing with this incredibly unstable patient who at any moment could go rushing out into the street or could punch you in the face or could start singing, you know, a symphony. I mean, this, and the fact that that people's retirements and lives and, you know, well-being relies on this you know, nutcase of an economy.
Well, but it relies on it because they put their retirement in risk.
But isn't that the problem, though? Why do we have economies based on risk? I mean, why are we doing that? Why have we allowed our system to be so taken over by the insanity of following these numbers and, you know, people, you know, doing horrible things, committing suicide over you know, numbers going up and down on a board? I mean, and the impact that has on real-world economy from this sort of, almost this sort of funny money stuff. And so, again, I understand that psychology probably plays a role in everything, but I think the fact that everything is based upon what people might happen or what could think or fears that this will or won't happen. You know, a hurricane heads into the Gulf and all of a sudden oil, you know, people are all freaked out about what's going to happen to the oil reserves, and then the hurricane leaves and people are pumped up.
Well, I mean, part of it, though, is that a lot of, I mean, a lot of it is, I mean, basic business, right, that you have to be able to, basic business has a major aspect of it is loans. And that's a risk. The bank is taking a risk on you. And that this is just a bigger aspect of that. So,
right,
I mean,
but I think that's true.
You wouldn't
the bank...
say that it's, I mean, you wouldn't disagree with the concept of loans, right? Other societies, smaller, less complex societies have the concept of loans. I'm saying to you that I'm going to be able to make more money in the future, but I can't get there yet. I can't wait until
I
have enough money to buy my building. Can you please pay me and I'll pay you back?
Well, I have friends, I know people that would say that you should have to wait until you can do that, and that the only reason that we feel
that
the need
slows
to live
down
beyond,
the development
right,
of,
but
of
the
a
question
society.
Is, but so what, though? I mean, part of the argument is, why does it need to be so rushed? Who cares? I mean, all of this is based on, I want to live beyond my means because I want the building now. Well, what if you just are? What if you just can't have it? What if you're going to have to wait till you're 50 until you get that building?
No, I mean,
you know,
I understand
why?
The point. No, but it's not that. It's that art. We want our society to develop as fast as possible, and if we're not doing it, a different society will. And so you have to be able to do that. A society that
so it ends up being mutually assured destruction, then. If every society agreed to move at a reasonable pace and not to try to rush to beat the other one out, you wouldn't have this issue.
It's a small world.
Exactly.
Come on, Greg.
I think it's Look, it's the excesses. I think the excesses of capitalism here have reared their ugly head again. And every time this happens,
yes, exactly,
people realize, wow, capitalism is incredibly excessive, and look at what happens. And then people say there's this flurry of activity to try to, you know, regulate the market and do things. And then 20 years later, then everyone forgets. And 20 years later, we're right back in the same position we were before. And that, to me, reflects a fundamental problem with the system. I mean, what's the one constant? The constant is a capitalist, ultimate free market system where this continually happens over and over again. I mean, look, I understand that society needs loans to a degree. I understand that people need help to be able to get home mortgages, and that sometimes, you know, they don't want to have to wait until they're in their mid-50s to be able to afford a house. I can understand that. But there's still something to be said for the idea of taking reasonable risks. And what the stock market seems to me to clearly indicate is that people take irrational risks all the time. And you could say, well, then those people ought to lose their money. But the problem is, it's never about just those individual people, right? Then it's about the impact that we have
right,
on the market
that's
generally
the issue,
because of
is
that. So the ripple
I don't
effect
have, as
that, is
where,
a problem.
Where I said in the beginning is I don't have a problem with this if this was some small part of our society. But the fact that these people's risks and greed can then affect us and have us have to pay the supposed $10,000 per household, which isn't true because, you know, I don't know when the last census was that would have mathematically worked out that way. But that's my issue, is that these people took risks to live and die by them. They should have to deal with it.
Right. And why are we responsible? Exactly. I wasn't there. And why are we responsible? And I don't even do anything with the stock market except for my retirement portfolio. And let me say, if I could somehow manage a retirement portfolio without doing stocks, I would. But, you know, it doesn't work that way. All of these matching systems that, you know, various employers offer come through the stock
you
market.
You have mutual funds. That's what you're saying.
Even,
that's what they,
know
that's what they usually are, is they're grouped mutual funds of a bunch of companies in big blocks.
I think they're a mix, though. They're like mutual. But either way, like, again, that's only I only do that because my university, my particular institution, matches what I contribute. If I could do it in some other way, like keep it in a savings account, for example, which just owed a bit, you know, 3-4% interest or something like that steadily, then I would do that instead. But it doesn't make sense to do that when I'm going to get much more, you know, upfront matched by my given institution. So, I don't know. We're all tied into it to a degree, and no matter where you live, and obviously we have listeners outside of the United States as well, you're affected by this to some degree. I just think that rather than always blaming this on this variable or that external or this other thing, I think there ought to be something said to the idea of paying attention to the constant, which is maybe the market itself is the problem, and maybe a system which puts so much emphasis on incredible risk-taking, and when the risks don't pan out, as will often happen, when you roll snake eyes, the result is that we have this disastrous economic situation.
I don't know, I guess people might say that it's not the stock market's fault, it's the government's fault of not regulating the housing
market. And I think there's something to that, sure. Yeah. So I guess, you know, for me, I think the stock market has major problems. Obviously, it has major problems currently, but I think there are problems even beyond that. And again, I'm not an economist, but just in general terms, it seems to me that there's something broadly wrong with the system. So I will rate the stock market a 4. What would you like to say?
I'm going to give it a 5. I mean, it's obviously it's developed for a reason and is a major part of our modern day society all across the world.
And that's just the problem. Okay. So a 5 for Clea, a 4 for me. So I guess we'll round that up to a 5. Senevine, what do you think about stock market? I think she's laughing. I guess that means that she agrees. That might also be because Clea is bouncing around. Okay, so a 5 for the stock market. Okay, next thing on the docket is the game Spore. And you can find more details about this at the website for the game, www.spore.com. Now, this game is from, as I said, the creator of The Sims, Will Wright. And many of you will know about The Sims. It's basically a game where you can live your life without actually having to live it for real. You create a family. They live in a house. You can build the house. They, you know, walk around. You have them go answer the phone and watch TV. And I've never really totally understood the appeal, but there's no denying that it's this huge, major success on the market. And this is Will Wright's newest creation. And he's done other stuff before. I think Populous was also Will Wright. SimCity. That was the other one. SimCity, SimEarth, things like that. So this is really kind of a culmination of all the work that he's done in the past. Spore is a game which consists of five separate stages where you begin by evolving your creature from a cellular level. So literally the first stage is just you floating around protoplasm, eating either little bits of meat or little bits of sort of other creatures or little green plants. And you gradually eat all those things as your creature gets bigger and bigger. And then when it reaches various stages, you can then add things to it. Like you can add flagella to make you faster, or you can put on a horn so you can more easily like break bubbles to get food and things like that. So the creature gradually gets larger and larger and evolves. And when it gets to a certain point, then you move on to the, I think it's the creature stage at that point. And the creature stage is where it's gotten onto land. And so you basically walk around to various places and you meet with other creatures and you try to basically encourage them to become part of your tribe or allied with your group of creatures. And you can do this one of two ways. One way is that you can just beat the heck out of them. That's the sort of violent way. And if you were a carnivore in the first stage, in the cell stage, it has an impact on how good you are on, say, beating people up in the second stage. So there is as you go through these stages, there is an effect from one stage to the next. Or you can optionally sing and dance in front of the set of creatures that you're trying to impress. And if you can mimic them, then they will be more likely to ally with you. And every time you ally with a tribe or defeat a tribe in combat, you get more points that you can use to expand your creature, make them faster and smarter and tougher and all those sorts of things. Once you've evolved past that, you move on to the tribal stage. This is where you've now got your creatures together as a tribe, and now you're working with other tribes, large tribes, to sort of, it's almost like a real-time strategy game at that point, where you put together little buildings and things like that to build musical instruments so that you can impress other tribes or the people. Again, when you get far enough along in that, you evolve to the next stage, which is the civilization stage. This is where you have large cities of your tribes, and the cities are basically, again, are trying to either ally with or convert or conquer other cities on the planet. And once you've allied your planet, you then move to the final stage, which is the space stage. And in the space stage, you build a spaceship and take your planet's group off to other places in the world. And it's almost like an online role-playing game here, where you've got all these, you know, defeat five creatures, go meet this guy, go talk to this race, you know, create a trade route and do all those other sorts of things. And that's the stage where I'm in right now.
This is where you lost me, Greg. Because this is, it's from watching you play it and from listening to it, it's just like, okay, so you have to dance. Oh, they like you a little bit more. Okay, dance. All right, they like you a little bit more. I mean, all right, feed him this food. Okay, feed him this food. Okay, so it's like those people on WoW that were willing to like fish for 10 days.
Well, it's really Ultima Online. Fortunately, WoW did a little bit less of that. But yeah, it's true. I mean, there are some people who won't like that because there can be some repetition to it. The one thing I'll say about this is the first few stages really don't last very long. I mean, the cell stage is 20 minutes, maybe. The creature stage is maybe 45 minutes, maybe. The tribe stage is maybe an hour. The civilization stage is maybe a couple of hours, maybe 3 hours at most. And then you move on to the space stage, and that's by far the longest stage, and obviously I haven't completed that. A lot of what people have said about this game is that each one of the individual parts sort of imitate other games that are out there, and the other games do it better. I mean, the civilization game, for example, lots of other real-time strategy games are much more detailed than this version of it. But Spore is a classic example of being about the sum of its parts, right? It's about the fact that it combines all these things, and you can see your creatures from the very beginning of their existence on, you know, in the universe to the point where they're sort of moving forward into space. And there is something cool about taking your group that you've created and saying, okay, now go forth and explore and meeting these other people. Another feature of it is it has this thing called the Sporepedia, because once you've created races, you can upload it, and generally people do, to this massive central database where there are literally millions of these creatures that people have created, and they then get downloaded into your world. So you can meet things that your friend created or that people halfway across the world created. And the size and scope of it is pretty impressive. Also, the creature creation is very impressive because you can build just about anything, and you can paint it and construct it and do whatever you want to your creatures and to the buildings and to the vehicles as well.
I have to say, Greg, going purely by your what I saw on the website a little bit and your creature, it didn't seem like there was much variety because your creature looked exactly the same as like the one from the model.
I disagree. I object to that.
my creature red instead of blue.
My creature is deeply unique. Well, no, I mean, I also think...
I wonder if it's one of those things where they claim that it's such a random generator that there's just so many options, but really when it gets down to it, you get the same ones.
Well, I also think it depends on how... I mean, I think I liked the way my creature came out, but I think you can also spend hours working on creatures, and I don't have the patience for that. I mean, I think there are some people who would love to do nothing more than just spend, you know, 24 hours, you know, working on nothing but, you know, the way their creature's coloring is, and I'm just not... I'm not into that. In a lot of ways, people have said, and I think there's something to this idea, that this is more of a toy than a game. You know, I mean, there is technically a final endpoint. I mean, I guess apparently there's a way to, quote, win the game, but that's not really why you're playing it. You're playing it because you want to create these creatures and explore and look around the galaxy and do all those sorts of things. And so to the extent that it does combine all of these stages and does allow you to evolve from the very beginning to the end, I think Spore is successful about that. I don't know, though, whether it's the kind of thing that people who are used to gaming in any of these other arenas, if you've played a real-time strategy game, if you've played an online role-playing game, I'm not sure that this is the kind of thing which is going to keep your interest. But if you're a non-gamer, usually, I can see this being the kind of thing that you would have fun with, because it's incredibly intuitive. You know, when you put things on the creatures, they come out just the way you would expect them to. You know, they move the way you would expect them to. They look the way you would expect them to. And there is something to be said for that idea, that you can put legs on and feet and eyes and do all these things, and it does come out looking the way you would have anticipated they would. And so that, I think it's a very good and technical achievement, and I think it is fun to play. Whether it's a long-term, really good game, I think that's another question. I think it's an impressive achievement. I just don't know how sort of, you know, game-like it actually is in the final analysis. So I think I'm going to give Spore a 6. I think that Spore has got a lot of potential. I don't know about, as I said, its game potential, but I think in terms of what it tries to accomplish, it's pretty impressive. So I guess I would say a 6. Clea, you have a rating?
I'm fine with a 6. I'd say more like a 5, but...
Okay, 5 or 6. I think I'd say a 6 because of the quality and the graphics. Also, it's pretty much bug-free, so that's good as well. One last thing I want to mention about this game, too, is about the copy protection scheme. A lot of people have complained that the copy protection is particularly draconian on this system, and I tend to agree. It hasn't affected me, but I do think that this is really overboard in terms of the copy protection that they've used on it, and I think Electronic Arts, which is the company which released it, has been justly criticized for doing that. So, but that aside, I think the game is interesting and is worth you checking out, and so we will say a 6 out of 10 for Spore. Okay, last on the docket for tonight is Seen Unseen. This is a podcast which was suggested to us by Chris again, and you can find this at www.seenunseenpodcast. That's SeenUnseenPodcast.com.
Shia. You like Shia?
No.
Yeah. You like Shia?
I used to like Shia. I like Shia and Guy to Recognizing Your
yes.
Saints. I like Shia in smaller films, Transformers,
no.
Not Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No.
Not Eagle Eye. I don't get what Spielberg is doing to this kid. It's either make or break.
Is he pimping him? He's Spielberg's little toy right now.
He's pimping him big time.
But he was good in Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
He was awesome in that film.
And I liked him in Disturbia, too, which is the same director, DJ Caruso,
right.
And Spielberg producer.
And he has to fit these roles he plays, ladies and gentlemen, because... A film like Eagle Eye, you can't really convince me that Shia's the man.
Why not?
You can't convince
Why
me.
Why not?
Because he's not a rescuer. He's not buff like Jake Gyllenhaal in Prince of
Shia
Persia.
But he's Shia LaBeouf.
You know what I'm talking about?
Why were you talking about Prince of Persia
because
already?
Because he's huge, dude. He's like muscular. Like Jake Gyllenhaal's muscular. At least make the kid, the little boy, look like he's the character that's going to save the day.
But the thing is he couldn't be... I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I didn't like the movie, obviously, but he couldn't be that buff guy because it's supposed to be the ordinary man, the innocent man, the Hitchcock thing, the innocent man caught in a world of...
In a world with Michelle Monaghan. Is that her name? Monaghan?
Monaghan. But no, he's supposed to be an everyday average guy, Joe Natural, Joe Schmo, and he gets a phone call, and then he has to run. Obey or you will die.
Okay.
He has to be a normal kid.
I don't like Shia. I'm done talking about Shia.
And essentially what this is a movie review podcast with Chris and Jimmy, as they say. But these are actually not just, you know, two random people watching movies and then making comments about them. They're actually industry insiders who have done movie work before, directly taken from their website. It says, these guys are industry insiders currently working on a major motion picture in addition to a bevy of side projects in the entertainment world. Their filmic debates became infamous within their circle of friends and colleagues, which prompted them to start recording the banter for your listening pleasure. And basically, each of these shows, which comes out roughly once a week, sometimes once every couple of weeks, normally runs about an hour long, and they will review three films. Normally, it's one very modern film, so they reviewed their latest...
Recent release,
I mean, yeah. So they reviewed Eagle Eye most recently, and then before that Ghost Town, then Burn After Reading before that. They reviewed Iron Man earlier, so they do one recent release, and then they go back to look at older films. So on one of the episodes that we listened to, which is the most recent, they started with Eagle Eye, then they reviewed Run Lola Run, which Clea and I actually saw. It stars Franka Potente, which is from the actress from the Bourne Identity series, mm-hmm. and then a film which I had not heard of called A Man Escaped, which is apparently some really cool foreign film. It's a very free-flowing show where they discuss back and forth what they liked and didn't like about it.
You know, as we've discussed, there's different types of podcasts, and one of the different types is group of people have fun talking, press record.
Right.
And that's what this is. I guess, as they said, they just wanted to record the banter that their friends seem to have enjoyed.
Although, in fairness, I mean, first of all, the audio quality is much, much better than many of the shows like that. And they clearly know movies. I mean, the quality of what they're talking about is much better. So it is recording a conversation.
But sometimes we like these and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we like these and sometimes what we say, and then it always gets us in trouble, is you need to edit.
Right. And Chris pointed out a couple of interesting things when he brought this to us. He said it was, one, he said it is like listening to a conversation. Uh-huh. And two, he mentioned that it's not safe for work, which is true. There is occasional language. But he pointed out in the email that there's no real reason for it to be unsafe for work. You know, they could cut out a couple of swear words and it would basically be the same show. And yeah, I mean, it's true. They probably could do with some editing. Yes. There are certainly moments where you wonder, okay, what's going on here? Because they're kind of wandering off into LA culture. I thought their digressions were more interesting than normal, though.
Purely what I'm basing this on is we listened to, like we usual, a few episodes.
Yep.
And in one episode, I really liked it. And I found it interesting, intriguing. They're great. They got a good sense of humor. They're fun banter. And then another episode, I found it a little boring. And that's what told me it needed to be edited.
I see.
You know, long rambling is great for getting out stuff. But then when you have to go back and listen to it and think, what do we need to cut? And sometimes that's tough when you're the people and you think, oh, but this all has to do with that. And I want to cut that. And
right.
Oh, but that explains that. Or maybe you just, you know, you're great and you think you're good at it, and so you don't want to cut any, or you don't think you have to cut anything.
Right.
But I do think that there was some that needed to be cut for that exact reason, that it could have been more poppy and it could have been a little bit less boring. Because you're never going to be on all the time.
Right. Well, except us.
Right. We don't edit at all.
In fact, there's no reason to believe that we've edited this episode a lot, with baby crying and dog biting bones, and none of that.
No.
You know, one of the things, looking at their website, which, by the way, is very navigable. It's pretty well, thank you. It's pretty well laid out. They have a couple of advertisements on the right side, but it's minor. Nothing that's really bothersome about their advertisements.
Oh,
and they have
a new release.
Oh, really?
Finding Nemo.
Oh,
it's
on iTunes. Well, yeah, once I get a phone, I can actually play some of it. But a lot of the reviews that they have, their podcast has been around for a while, and they've started to be noted and pointed out with other podcasts and also with some magazines, Movie Maker magazine, some newspapers list them in the top five. iTunes has chosen them as one of their picks.
Wow, how do we get in these things?
They were nominated San Diego Comic-Con International. Well, by reviewing people like them and then rubbing elbows with them, and then all of a sudden we network. And, you know, so these people really get a 10 and a half. Really, no, just kidding.
The way that they review movies has actually ended up being the way that we've reviewed a lot of movies, but for different reasons. We don't seem to get to movies very much. And so usually it happens that one of us has seen the movie and the other one hasn't. And I guess it's a good idea in that you'll be able to review a movie, but also take into consideration spoiling and that kind of spoilers and that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, they tend to stay away from what we could tell from spoilers that are too significant, which I think is interesting. And we think that there are themes associated with each of these. A couple of weeks ago, they had a show which was was all about baby movies, and so
this
is
all about running.
This week was all about running, right? And they had different opening songs that they were trying to reflect the running theme. And so I thought that was.
But
interesting.
I have to say that there
and a lot of different films.
There is the risk of that in that you don't actually get to really discuss a movie. That doesn't mean all the time. There's some movies that you really can discuss without ruining it because of the type of movie that it is. But there's also some movies that you can't discuss without really dealing with the whole movie in general. And and so I would think that they would say the point of this is not to really discuss the movie in depth, but in just give it you a taste so you can know whether or not you should see the movie. But, you know, being a little bit selfish, them being individuals that might actually be able to discuss a movie in depth.
Intelligently, yes.
I would kind of like to hear them do that. And so that's, I found that a little bit lacking. I would have actually liked them to delve into the movie and discuss things a little bit more in depth, which they did in some instances, but not all. And I think that was because of the spoiler aspect.
Now, I'm just looking at some of the names of the movies because they go from kids' movies to science fiction to although they're a little bit too pleased with 2001, which I think is one of the most boring science fiction movies ever made. I don't care how, supposedly.
Maybe if you were into, making movies, you would have respected a little bit more.
If I were into making really slow-paced movies that are really boring.
Moving on.
But, I was just looking at some of the listings, and one of the episodes that they have was Bangkok Dangerous. We should have listened to that episode so we could hear them, I hoped, and slam the heck out of the movie. Followed by, never heard of this before, Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. Now, I was not aware that movie title existed, but that is quality title.
Yeah.
That's probably
that
better than the movie itself. I think so.
Right there.
.. And also with ..
I know movies nowadays, you see the previews, you don't need to see the movie. I think you can read the title and you don't see
and you
the
don't
movie.
Even need to see the trailer, that's even. It. You can get all of it. But these guys do have good banter. They're smart. They obviously know the movies. And I understand what Clea is saying. I hadn't thought of it, but it's true. It probably would be helpful to have gotten a little bit more in-depth even with their reviews of the movies. They also do interviews and things like that as well. I noticed that they did a 2007 year in review show where they talked about the movies that came out. And, since they're in LA, they can often comment about, like they were talking about in the last one, do you pronounce it Shia LaBeouf? Who's young Indiana Jones or whatever, Indiana Jones' son.
But
anyway, it's Shia LaBeouf, and they were like, and then we went to this place, and Shia was hanging around, and so it's kind of neat to hear that.
And also because of LA, one of them is 42. They look like they're in their 20s.
I know, it's ridiculous. Apparently everyone who lives in LA is 15, 20 years younger. We'll have to talk to Russ about that and see if that's true. But I think the bottom line is, Clea's right, this is a kind of conversational podcast which could do with editing, but the initial quality is much better than some of those shows. So when you start from a higher level and then have editing issues, that cuts down significantly the problems, for me anyway, that would be there if you had a lower quality show to begin with that also needed editing. And beyond that, I think that the website's well constructed, the show is well constructed, and it's a lot of interesting discussion. So what do you want to say on this one?
For some reason, 6 is coming to mind.
I thought it was a little better than that.
It seems a little
because
low
of the,
to me.
Because of the audio quality,
that,
because of the...
I guess 7.
Because of the quality of what they're doing to begin with, I think a 7 makes more sense to me.
Okay.
Because I think also that it's rare to find a podcast where you have people who are really experts in something specific that also can talk intelligently about it. I mean, that's kind of what we try to do, but we, as listeners to the show will know, we review everything. And that means that occasionally we wander into areas that we don't know.
You wouldn't let me review sleep deprivation.
I'm sorry. Yes, I will get back to that in a second because I want to give you that last second before the end of the show to talk about that. But, for example, we sometimes wander, to quote a political phrase from earlier this season, above our pay grade, i.e. into the stock market, for instance. We consider ourselves broadly educated, but, we certainly don't have specific information or knowledge about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get people who really do know about a particular subject and can really talk about it intelligently and have a sense of humor about it, it's worth doing. And I think for that alone, it kind of, makes at least the 7 range for me. So we'd say a 7 out of 10 for Seen Unseen. You should check it out. And thanks to Chris, as always, for the suggestion.
Yep.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us for this week. But I do want to give Clea, as I promised, one opportunity to review Sleep Deprivation.
Well, I don't know if it was a promise. I'm simply saying that I thought we reviewed everything, and I said I wanted to review Sleep Deprivation, and you wouldn't let me.
And the reason was, why?
You said it was like a non-entity.
I said,
just not
no,
fair.
What I said was that I couldn't imagine anyone giving it high marks. You know,
oh, like we haven't reviewed things that got really
no. Marks. My point is, there's no discussion to be had. Like, you're not going to say
okay,
sleep
well, that's
deprivation.
What I'm saying. We could have a more sophisticated discussion. Maybe sleep deprivation has its purposes, like
maybe it can
as a form of torture, or you know, as a way to reach nirvana. You
alternative
know?
Energy source. If you want to stay
maybe,
up longer,
yes.
Who knows? Okay, then having said all that, now that we've had that really extensive discussion,
I haven't done the research. I can't do that now.
I'm going to give sleep deprivation a one. I don't like sleep deprivation.
I can't do that. No matter, even though
the only reason
the
you can't do it is because you're sleep
right
deprived.
Oh, so sleep deprived.
So sleep deprived. If any of you know and feel Clea's pain, please let us know in the comments and let us know what you would rate sleep deprivation.
I'm sure actually we got quite a few parents out there that would weigh in about whether or not we should do the Ferber or
yeah, whether we should let her cry it out or whether we should continue to, you know.
She wakes up every 3 hours, and then one time during the night she wakes up and is awake, and it's
right.
too early. She's only slept for 8 hours.
Right.
So we're having to put her back down again. And
which we do by knocking her out.
She's learning to go back down again, but it's still hard. We have to make the decision whether or not to stop feeding her at night and just let her sleep.
Right.
And they say in sleep training, you either cry or you need lots of time. Time or crying. One of the two.
And Clea's like, what about sleep, though? Where does sleep come in?
Sleep time, comes crying, after crying and time.
And time. And we spent a lot of time crying, so that works.
So she should be great now.
She should be all set. So thanks, as always, for listening, everyone out there. We will get a show to you more soon this next time, I believe. And I know I've said that before, but I think we'll be able to do that. We're on a more regular schedule with this, not with sleep. But thanks for listening, as always. Please continue to send your suggestions. Oh, and one last thing I want to mention about the phone number. The phone number that is listed on the website has been taken away because they claim... Yeah, because
the
they're morons.
Seattleites.
It's K7 is the one that does it. So I have to get a new number, which will not be UFR1. The customer service was less than optimal. So that phone number will not work. I will get a new number up there soon, and then I will let all of you wonderful people know. In the meantime, of course, you can always leave comments, email, and so forth. So I think that's all for this week.
Yeah.
Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!